really good thing about public spaces is that there are solutions out there, because there's so many problems around feminism and sexism and patriarchy and misogyny that you look at and go, I don't know how we're going to fix this. And we are going in going, hey, do you know what? You could build something different. People go, oh yeah, there's something we can fix. That's great. I can really get behind this, because people want to make a difference. But so much of the time, you just don't even know where to begin.
On International Women's Day, I'm delighted to launch Season 3 of Stand Tall with my first guest, Susanna Walker. In 2021, Susanna, along with Imogen Clark, co-founded Make Space for Girls, a charity that campaigns for better public spaces for teenage girls. Research shows that girls and young women are overwhelmingly excluded from public spaces. Parks and multi-use games areas are often planned and designed for stereotypical boys. Think skate parks, BMX tracks, and football pitches. As a result, parks are dominated by boys, and girls are left feeling unwelcome, insecure, and often unsafe. Last year, LSE Cities and Make Space for Girls ran a 7-week research project in Crewe with 9 teenage girls. This next clip is taken from their short film, Are Girls Being Designed Out of Public Spaces?
I mean, it's a nice open space, don't get me wrong, but it's the classic kind of park for how girls have been left out. There's a little play area for young children, which I would never ever use now. Maybe when I was 4 or 5, but I wouldn't ever go in there now. And then there's the Mooga, the big like kind of court for like basketball and football, and it's all men that use them and all boys, and they all gather and like congregate and all play sports together, and we're just left on the side.
Susanna and her colleagues are on a mission to turn this around. Through research and engagement, Make Space for Girls is working to ensure the voices of girls and young women are heard in the planning process.
We shouldn't have to change who we are in a public space. You know, like women are harassed in the street all the time. Everywhere should be safe for us. There's nothing wrong with who we are as women. There's something wrong with the place. The change should come from the place, not us.
In this episode, I ask, what does better look like? Is there a one-size-fits-all solution? And how can councils, developers, and design professionals embrace change so that public spaces are more inclusive, not just for girls, but for everyone? Let's meet Susanna. Good morning, Susanna. I'm so excited to welcome you as my first guest of 2023. This will be going out on International Women's Day, and I thought there's no more appropriate discussion to have than Make Space for Girls. I've seen this pop up in so many of my social media feeds, with so many discussions around equality and the spaces around us. So I'd really like to talk to you about how you got into that. But before we do, give us a little bit of background about yourself and how you've got to today.
Well, I'm Susanna. Yes, I'm a trustee and co-founder of Make Space for Girls, but I've done all sorts of things before that. I've worked in museums and studied design history. I was a television producer for a number of years, working on some programmes you may have heard of on the BBC and Channel 4. And I've written books. For a long time, I ran a blog on vintage posters. So all sorts of things.
Yes, The Late Show, to name one, and Changing Rooms, which is going back a bit.
That's the absolute polar opposites of my career. The Late Show, which, very good, really great to work on, lots of art, not many people watched it. Changing Rooms, a little bit less art, really quite a lot of people watched it.
So fast forward to kind of a few years ago, I suppose, and the book that inspired so many of us during lockdown, which was Caroline Criado Peres's Invisible Women, which is all about gender data bias in the world. She was sort of saying was designed wholly by men. And tell us a little bit about what you took from that book and how you started Make Space for Girls.
Really, it was because of Invisible Women. I read the book in small doses because it was making me so cross. And there's about 3 pages in there about parks and about how gender really affects, particularly teenagers, the way they use parks. And I was horrified because I'm a feminist and I have a teenage daughter, and yet I'd never seen it. So I walked around just like, oh, my eyes have been completely opened. I live in Froome in Somerset, and I went round the town, and yes, it was exactly as she described. We have a skate park, we have a BMX track, and we have a mooga, or a fenced pitch, and they were all dominated by boys. And I went to the council, and they said, oh, we don't consider gender when building our teenage facilities. To which I went, yes, that's the problem. And this made me so cross that I went and spoke to Imogen, who I'd been at university with and who'd spent her working career as a lawyer. And very specifically, she'd worked in employment law, so doing a lot of work around the Equalities Act. And she said, I think we've got quite an interesting equalities issue here. And so out of that, and then a lot more conversations after that, we realised that this was really something worth doing. Because, I mean, obviously the campaign is worth having, but you've got a very different amount of leverage if you're going to a council and saying you have a legal duty to consider that, rather than, wouldn't it be nice if you thought about teenage girls? So from those sort of two worldviews colliding, and from Caroline Corrado Perez, came Make Space for Girls.
I'm very aware that this was set up in March 21. We're in 2023 now, so it's not much time, but this has really escalated.
Oh boy, has it escalated. We thought we'd be doing this for sort of half a day a week, just gently in the corner, and it has gone mad. I think we started at a very propitious time because of the Sarah Everard case, because of Me Too. People were willing to listen in a way that they might not have been a couple of years before. And I think that's been really important. And I also think, actually, that the really good thing about public spaces is that there are solutions out there. Because there's so many problems around feminism and sexism and patriarchy and misogyny that you look at and go, I don't know how we're going to fix this. And we are going in going, hey, do you know what? You could build something different. People go, oh, yeah, there's something we can fix. That's great. I can really get behind this, because people want to make a difference. But so much of the time, you just don't even know where to begin. Things are changing all the time. You know, this has turned into something that we really couldn't have envisaged.
You have three very specific goals that you were targeting. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of those three goals and how far you are through the process?
So we're doing a lot of things we hadn't necessarily imagined, all of which are good. But when we set out, our number one aim was just to raise awareness of the issue, because without that, nothing else can happen. And that has been going okay. Then the second thing we really want to do is to gather some data, because we just don't know enough about what goes on in teenage facilities to be able to say, you know, with any authority, this works, this doesn't. And that's, it's also a duty under the Equality Act that if you don't have the data, the case law says you have to go and find it. So we've been working with researchers, because when you say we have no data to a university, they're like, oh, great, research. And for example, I mean, this was happening beforehand, but there's a really good piece of work that's come out of Leeds University, which is talking to women and girls about safety in parks. And obviously safety is a huge barrier. And when you present that to people, they're genuinely shocked. And we've got the real voices of teenage girls in that. And that's great. And data changes things. We'd really like to have some interventions. And this is starting to happen now in parks and playgrounds and public spaces where stuff is built as co-productions with teenage girls. And then we evaluate it, because it's difficult for councils. They don't have much money and they want to know that what they're going to do works. If you order a mooga, you get a mooga, people play on the mooga. Nobody's going to tell you off for building a mooga. So if you're going to do something different, they want the reassurance. So we need to evaluate some pilot studies so that we then say to councils, yeah, we've done this. This happened. You know, there was X percent increase in girls in the park. That's great. The final thing we'd like to do, and hello, anybody who's got a large swathe of land that they like to donate for this, we'd like to create a play area that's entirely co-designed and produced with teenage girls. There is one in Sweden, but there's nothing in the UK. So it would just be fantastic if we could do that.
So I know that Women in Property were helping do some research and run some workshops with the girls to find out the kind of spaces that they'd like to have access to. Could you share some examples? And how do you go about engaging with the girls that they might not actually be able to imagine what they're trying to describe and design?
Talking to teenage girls is absolute core of all the things we do, because let's face it, it's quite a while since Imogen and I were teenagers. Things have changed. We don't know what they want. And also it really varies depending on where you are. So every part of the research, the building, is threaded through with talking to teenage girls. And yes, Women in Property helped out with some workshops in Bath, which were really interesting. But it's always really interesting because teenage girls are great and they really know their area and they want to tell you about it. We had a couple of work experience girls last summer who were in Brickfields Park, the park we're working on, and they were just doing counts and, you know, researching what was going on in that park. And when they wrote up their material, they completely, without asking, wrote me 2 pages about how Sydney Gardens in Bath was great. Because for people who don't know Bath, it's by the Holborn Museum. So it's got a cafe and toilets, easy access, and lots of people coming through. It's a cut through to all sorts of areas of Bath. So there's always people walking through it. So it feels really busy. And actually, people are the single best guarantors of safety. They make a place feel safe. Because it's on a really weird bit of land that's cut up by the canal and the railway line goes underneath it. So it's naturally divided up into different spaces. Oh, and they've got some big swings. And they liked that park so much that they needed to tell me about it, even though we hadn't asked. So I'm guessing that works for teenage girls because the teenage girls say so. But as you say, what they don't have is this shopping list that if you ask a boy, they'll go, yeah, I want a football pitch, I want this, because they've had provision. For girls, they've basically disengaged from parks. They don't see parks as being for them. So they just look at you and go, well, I don't care. I'll go somewhere else.
They end up in these in-between spaces or actually in these out-of-bound spaces, which are maybe smaller, more quieter.
Yes, it's fascinating where they do end up. And in the work in Bath, it was really interesting because I had a very roundabout conversation with a group of girls who were saying that school told them not to go to the park. And the park we were looking at is very close to this girls' school. And it's used as a cut through by lots of girls on the way home. So, you know, they should be stopping and using it. But there was nothing for them in the park. So they would then go on the little kids' swings, which are fenced off and, you know, seen as being belonging to the toddlers. The mums of the little kids would tut at them and then ring the school because they're in school uniform. And so school would tell them not to go to the park. Which is one solution, but it's really, we shouldn't be telling teenage girls not to go out and be active. What we should be doing is giving them something in the park so that the mums and the toddlers don't tut at them. You know, but there is so much that they tell us. And I said, a lot of it is location specific, but a lot of what they tell us is that what is provided at the moment doesn't work for them. For example, moogers, which are the most common thing provided for teenagers, you know, the fence, the pitch. They've got 3 metre high fences, mostly, really narrow entrances, and they are full of teenage boys who you may not know. Now, as an adult woman, that doesn't feel like a great safe space to me. So for a teenage girl, it's like, of course you're not going to go into that. You know, they've effectively been designed out of the space. With skate parks as well, because what also happens with a single space is it gets territorialised by the most dominant group, which, spoiler alert, is not often teenage girls. So if you break up spaces and create lots of different spaces within a park, then lots of different groups can use them simultaneously. But skate parks are one giant bowl. So if you're a newbie girl, you've got all these boys standing around the edge staring at you as you're trying to do something that you don't not sure if you know how to do it. So you don't do it. And also the boys are sometimes, I have to say, quite aggressive. We've talked to girls who've had stones thrown at them. I mean, we did some research and other people have done some research and 80 to 90% of girls don't feel comfortable in the skate park at some point because of boys. We've also, at the worst case scenario, talked to the mothers of girls who've pretty much given up skateboarding in their local park because of rape threats.
Which is such a shame, isn't it, when you see the success of Sky Brown and the increase in female representation in sport and Olympics and how inspiring that can be. But if you then look back at the grassroots and they're not feeling welcome or part of that, it's quite a challenge.
Yeah, but also the number of girls who want to skateboard isn't actually that high. Yeah. Whereas roller skating, lots of girls roller skate. Where are the facilities for roller skating?
I think there was a stat that I heard. Teenage girls are 3 times more likely to have anxiety or disorders because they're not able to be out in these spaces or feeling welcome. And that all levels, any age group of females can be obese. But it was all pointing to the fact that activity, whether it's play, sport, etc., and being outdoors is a very welcome addition to anyone's life. So we need to help increase that.
Yes, absolutely. The thing is, there are plenty of other activities that don't look like what we provide. One of the things that's most popular when you talk to teenage girls are swings. Also, adult women, actually, when you talk to adult women, if you put a picture of swings on Twitter, it's like lots of women just going, actually, I don't care about teenage girls, let me at that. We need bigger swings. And they want bigger swings that fit their bums, that go really high, not basket swings. But actually swinging is a good source of moderate activity. But the other thing is just going to the park is really good for you. It's blindingly obvious. Girls are more active if they go to the park than if they just sit on the sofa at home. So let's not judge what they're doing there, but just get them to the park in the first place. But yes, the health data is, I think, increasingly being taken seriously, because at every stage of adolescence, girls are less active than boys. But we never connect that up with the fact that we don't give them anything to be active on. But also, the research is really clear now that access to green space, I hate that jargon, parks, green things, lawns, woods, forests, trees, is really important for mental health in young people. There's not a huge amount of sex disaggregated data, but they've done a very big research review and it's pretty clear that even just 15 minutes twice a week can make a significant impact on depressive disorders and general low mood. As you say, in a world where teenage girls are three times more likely to have a mood disorder than teenage boys, maybe there's quite a simple health intervention we can do and something that we really need to address. And interestingly, because for councils, obviously, money is a huge problem, but the active partnerships and Sport England and people like that, you know, have more money. So there is more chance of actually being able to create something that will attract teenage girls, because it's such an obvious opportunity.
Someone was mentioning that their son was actually happier to play hockey rather than football because it was involving the girls. And I thought that was a really timely reminder that this is about being inclusive for everyone. There are some really good urban examples, and I know that you quote quite often about the Vienna projects that were being researched back in the 1990s, which seems so long ago. Why has that not actually been more widely discussed or seen as an exemplar? Barcelona and other European cities recognise that this is something that actually is good for everyone, and we're so far behind on it.
Oh, good question. But yes, it absolutely is good for everybody, because when we talk to parents, they tell us there are loads of teenage boys who are also excluded from moogas and from skate parks, who don't want the facilities that are there. And that comes through very clearly in the research. And actually what all teenagers want is a space to play. They're still kids. Under the UN Rights of the Child, they have a right to play until the age of 18. So many of our play areas say no over 12. So where are they meant to go? And it's about being inclusive for everybody. So to give the example, if you create more different spaces, that space is for other boys. It's spaces for LGBTQA plus teenagers. You know, it's spaces for older people to sit down as well. It's widely inclusive. I wonder that about Vienna. Every time I present about Vienna, where, you know, whose gender mainstreaming project was incredible and really well researched, it's like, why am I still presenting about this 20 odd years afterwards? Why is that? Are there not 100 different examples? There are others. Umeå, a city in the north of Sweden, has done some really interesting stuff around the same sort of issues across the city, and across also issues about violence against women, about representation, all sorts of stuff. Then they redesigned a subway to make it really beautiful with artwork about a woman artist, and it was just great. And it's like, oh yes, we can just think about this differently. I don't know. You know, dismantling sexism seems to have taken an inordinately long time generally. I guess it's just another part of that, really.
Can you describe, whether it's the Swedish example, Vienna, what have they discovered? Is there an easy, simple win?
The checklists that we have are all sort of all derived from all the different projects that have gone on and from talking to teenage girls. I would say the single biggest win is that one space alone doesn't work, as I've mentioned. The other thing I would say as a really simple win is put a big bank of big swings in. That comes up so often. Also hammocks, also gym bars, but they're a heck of a lot cheaper than a skate park. And I would warrant that probably more people would use them than a skate park. Not that there's anything wrong with skate parks, but we need to have something else as well. And swings and gym bars and things like that are really inexpensive. So the two parks we're working in Bradford with as part of a project called Join Us Move Play, they've had budgets of 30,000-40,000, which is a tenth of what a skate park costs. And that will put in seating and some swings and a bit of landscaping. It really doesn't have to be that expensive. It's just about thinking about it.
I don't want to embarrass my colleague, Katie, who helps on this podcast, has recently got into football, but she's finding some frustrations that, you know, the ladies' teams seem to be segregated to the most difficult times on the timetable. And just some comments about where the pitches are positioned. I wonder if you had any thoughts or if any of that research has revealed any easy wins to try and resolve some of those pitch designs.
The idea of bookings in particular is where discrimination can lurk in surprising places. There's not been research on this as such, but I know that, for example, at Hackney Downs, from talking to women who play there, that the men's team get all the best slots because they have much more money, so they block book the slot. They're the ones playing at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday, and the women's teams end up with 8 o'clock on a Friday night when, frankly, they'd rather be in the pub. And this was actually addressed in Umeå in Sweden, where they've been working on all sorts of gender equality issues. They said that teams could book depending on where they were in the league, and the women's team were doing much better, so the women got priority booking. But we need to look at things like that, because only the most dedicated women are going to play football when it is at a stupid time. If you put it on a sensible time, more women play football. Quelle surprise. A sense of being scrutinised and watched is one of the problems for women in playing sport outdoor. But there are sometimes simple design solutions. For example, there were some netball courts sort of out of London by the kind of road that gets really backed up with cars, and so the cars will stop and people, mostly men, lean out of their car windows and were watching the women playing netball, and they felt, you know, and they're getting shouted at, and they felt that they didn't like using the pitch that was closest to the road. So the really simple solution was just to rotate two pitches 90 degrees so that the nets were facing the road, and suddenly it was much more accessible for women. So yes, it's really site specific. And what this requires is for people to look long and hard at what the barriers are in their one place. There isn't a rule of thumb that goes, oh, this is a problem, we must solve it. You need to investigate what the barriers are.
Without going into a sort of a negative, what blockers are you seeing? Is it resource? I mean, the Equality Act is from 2010, isn't it? So it's something that isn't new. Why do you think that councils aren't thinking about this? Or is it something that they just find too difficult?
I think there are two key blockers. As you say, resources is a big one, particularly for councils. And it's not just the straightforward, we don't have the money to do this. It's also about maintenance and competing interests. The other big blocker is guidance. For example, if we've got a council whose planning stipulates that for every 1,000 new houses, they have to provide X number of hectares of pitches, you've already embedded an inequality into the system before you even start. Sport England has just put out draft guidance about active landscapes, you know, about how to create spaces that enable everybody, diverse groups, to be active. I'm going to read you their list of suggested facilities. And it goes, informal sport can be integrated throughout the public realm, such as skate parks, off-road bike tracks, that's the BMX track, moogas, table tennis table, don't have any data on table tennis tables, that's potentially one. Marked running routes. Now, those actually are really good for women, so I'll give them that. Parkour. 0.2% of the population do parkour. It's mostly male in America. And outdoor gyms. Where is the stuff for women in that? It's basically guidance for creating what Caroline Corrado Perez would call a default male landscape. Unless we address the guidance that's telling people to build stuff that just works for boys, we're never really going to fix this.
How do you feel that city planners and people in the built environment can actually think about the places that they're planning and designing? What's your number one ask at the moment?
Eva Kyle, who led all the Vienna work, she says, you have to build for where we are now, not for some future utopia. And so at the moment, we have to create spaces that enable girls to do what they want. We can't legislate to suddenly make them all be included in the football games. And if they're systematically excluded from junior school, lots of them don't want to play football. So there are big societal things we need to address. But right now, we have to build for where we are now. There are some developers who are interested down the line, but is for that space and the budget to create a park with teenage girls. I'm going to big up developers, actually, because developers are not pushing back. It's quite often the planning that's the issue because of the guidance. Because developers can see that it's not just social value in a tick box kind of way, but also by creating communities that work for all age groups and creating communities that people want to stay in, they are also creating actual value. And they can see that. So developers are actually really receptive and in master plans are starting to build some of these principles in. But it's going to be 5, 6, 10 years before those actually emerge as anything on the ground. But it's great. They are really trying to make a difference. So for architects and planners, I think the number one request is think about it and think about it at the beginning of a project. So it's not just at the point where you're installing the facilities. It's about creating spaces that feel safe and welcoming, that have spaces for different groups, maybe scattered across the whole development, not just in the one plonky place. So it's about using that to inform the almost the skeleton of the design, as well as the little details on top. Main thing I'd say, come and talk to us. We're basically an information sharing resource. We've got lots of research. We can point to particular aspects of research. We do lots of CPD for architecture and landscape architecture and developers firms. We're always really happy to come and talk to give some examples of what's been done elsewhere. The other thing that we are doing is data gathering. And this is where we need people's help. Basically, everything that's in parks at the moment, skate parks, multi-use games areas, BMX tracks, we have no data on who's actually using them. We don't even know what proportion of the teenage population are using them. Are they good provision? We have no idea, but we just keep building them. So as a really simple exercise, in the last May Bank holiday weekend, we're going to do Park Watch, which is basically the Great British Garden Bird Watch, but for teenagers. And it's quicker because you don't have to stay there for an hour. We're just going to ask people to go to their local park, look at each of the teen facilities, count how many teenagers are using it, not just sitting around, but actually using it. Count how many of them are girls. Send us the report on a nice little form, and then we are going to aggregate all of that data. And it's going to be a bit rough and ready, but it's better than any other data. There is no data at all on Moogers. There are thousands of them across the country. So it's going to be citizen science data, but it's data. And it's a starting point. And I think it's really going to focus council's minds on how geared towards boys the provision is.
So how do people engage with that? Is that going to be on your website?
It will be on our website. A little box will pop up saying, would you like to sign up to our newsletter? If you sign up to our newsletter, you will find out about Parkwatch. We will be starting to send stuff out next month, and it's the last weekend in May.
That's brilliant. Susanna, thank you. I always finish my podcast asking three questions of my guests. So my mantra and the theme to the podcast, which is Stand Tall. And I wonder if you have a mantra.
Generally, it's just keep going. But this year, and it sounds very odd, my mantra is discipline. But it's not about being rigorous. It's just about knowing that if I make the effort to look after myself a bit, everything else gets a bit easier.
So instead of a New Year's resolution, I pick one guiding word. And in 2023, that is simplicity. So I wonder if you had one guiding word, what that would be.
Openness. Because at the moment, we've learnt this with Xspace for Girls. You can't predict what's coming around the corner. You just have to be open to what's coming up.
Lovely. And if you could change one thing then about society, the world, what would that be?
I would say smash the patriarchy, but it's been such a long, boring process, hasn't it? Failing that, there will be a vast budget for improved, inclusive teenage facilities, but ideally the patriarchy.
Brilliant. Susanna, thank you for your time today, and I wish Make Space for Girls every success in the future. And I hope that many of the people that we're linked to can reach out and help on your journey.
Thank you for having me. It's been great fun.
Thank you once again to Susanna. Make Space for Girls has been on my radar for a number of years, and it was really good to finally have that discussion today. If you're a planner, developer, or designer, I urge you to check out Make Space for Girls' brand new website. There are so many great resources on there, from research papers and toolkits to good practice case studies. And whilst you're there, remember to sign up to Parkwatch, which is happening during the last weekend in May 2023. Let's all make space for girls. Thanks to Stride to Glown for sponsoring this podcast. And if you want any further information on this podcast or Stride to Glown, then please visit stridetoglown.com and at Stride to Glown on social media. Links and resources from today's episode are in the show notes, and you can follow me and let me know what you think of the show at RachelJ_Bell across Twitter and Instagram. Stand tall and talk soon.